and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And I'm Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 1980, Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, continuing our punk two-parter, possibly a trilogy. Next week is for garage rock, but kind of in the same vein.
Yeah.
Dead Kennedys are an American punk rock band that formed in San Francisco, California in 1978, known for the controversy that they attracted due to their provocative lyrics and often satirized political figures and pop culture in general, and the transgressive artwork that they often used. What did they call that one that came with Frankenchrist, was it?
Oh, I forget.
You know the album I'm talking about, right? Was it
Frankenchrist? Oh, yeah.
Something landscape.
Well, with Frankenchrist was the one with the Shriners, I think, wasn't it?
Okay. It was something landscape, and it was a bunch of, you know, genital landscape. they were one of the defining hardcore bands during their initial eight-year run. Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables is the band's debut studio album. Kind of amazing to think that this was their first album.
Did In God We Trust Incorporated, was that, I mean, that was an EP, but I always wondered if that actually predated
not. According to Wikipedia, this was first.
Yeah.
This was their first out of the gate thing. And it's the only album to feature drummer Bruce Schlesinger, better known as Ted, and guitarist Carlos Cadona, better known as 6025. It was released on September 2nd, 1980, through Cherry Red Records in the UK, and later reissued on Biafra's own Alternative Tentacles record label, Jello Biafra. I don't think I've said his first name before this. In the US, and produced by Oliver DiCasio and East Bay Ray, and features Jello Biafra on lead vocals, East Bay Ray on guitar, Klaus Fluoride on bass and backing vocals, Ted on drums, with additional musicians 6025 on guitar on Ill in the Head, Paul Russler keyboards on Drug Me and Stealing People's Mail, Ninochka, I didn't practice these names, on keyboards on Drug Me and backing vocals, Dick Dirksen, Bobby Unrest, Michael Snyder, Bruce Calderwood, aka Bruce Luce, Barbara Hellbent, Hygiene, Kurt and Chi-Chi, backing vocals.
How many of these are real names, though, of course? Well,
I'm sure Barbara Hellbent and Hygiene are.
Okay.
A reminder, I don't edit any songs into our episodes for copyright reasons, but down in the description, if you're listening to this on YouTube or on our blog at johnandscotto.com, you'll find links to the album on Spotify and YouTube, so you can listen along if you'd like. On to track one, Kill the Poor. Love the slow, anthemic opening on this one.
Right. Now, people compare them to the Sex Pistols time, at least. And
the kind of warbly vocal. That's the, and the genre. Those are the comparisons.
I'd say the genre, but I think, you know, Johnny Rotten was a one-trick pony, you know? He did that one trick really well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jello's
warble was better.
Jello can be... Jello goes from Roger Rabbit to Charles Manson.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. there's definitely like a spectrum that he can fly around on.
Right.
And he's not menacing on this. He's singing it so sweetly, mm-hmm, about killing the poor.
Right.
And that just makes it that much more like, whoa, wait a minute.
the chorus is so catchy. It pops into my head at really inappropriate times.
Right. Which, I mean, you know, Johnny Rotten was all about, you know, being menacing and, mm-hmm, just, you know, the snarl, where Jello is about being insidious.
Yeah, exactly. and the lo-fi recording on the album works really well for it. It sounds kind of crap, but it works.
The mix is, like, different from how I remember it. Like, mm-hmm, I feel like the music is up a lot more than it used to be in the older mixes.
Okay.
Like, I feel like the CD version I had, you know, back in the day, Jello's vocals were much more over it.
See, I never had it on CD. I had it on cassette, mostly listened to it in my car, so it didn't sound that much different on Spotify.
And I think this was actually the first time I realized that there was, and of course, this could be a political statement, but it's the first time I realized that there was further left than liberal, you know, because you have this conservative indoctrination of, you know, what liberal is and just this, the left.
Yeah.
But this song is pretty much, you know, there's, you know, the centrists and then the left. And they're talking about Jane Fonda convincing, you know, it's okay if we kill everybody. The real estate values will go up. We'll have a place. I mean, isn't it kind of what they've done with gentrification instead of the neutron bomb?
Well, I mean, that's a lot of what he was talking about, too.
Yes.
Removal of the poor in general.
Right. Get this undesirable element out of the way so we can... we can make some, you know, playgrounds.
Right. And just a general note about the album as a whole. Love how present the bass is. Class Fluoride was amazing.
That's the other difference. These guys, I mean, Steve Jones and the Sex Pistols, one thing. But the rest of the band...
Sid was barely on the records.
Right. Sid did not know how to play the bass.
And whereas Klaus is brilliant, Ted was
damn good. They tried to compare the Sex Pistols to the Monkees, but that's an insult to the Monkees because they were, you know, pretty good musicians.
Well, yeah, except there's the commonality there is that they were both marketing gimmicks.
Right.
You know, the Pistols were a marketing gimmick put together by Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood.
Right. And then this, of course, is a manifesto more than a marketing.
Yeah. On to track two, Forward to Death. Love the drum sound. Love how distinct all of the instruments are. I have this thing, you know how people are always picky about their food touching? I'm like that with mixing. I want to hear all of the instruments distinctly. That's why I love
Sometimes
Rush.
Sometimes I like it when they're going together, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, like I don't mean playing together, but I mean just how they're mixed, where I can easily pick out the bass or the guitar or the drums. It's not a wall of sound. I'm not a big fan of the wall of sound.
Oh, well, sometimes I really like it. Like, I mean, yeah, if it is something in unison, like the keyboards and the lead guitar playing a lead together.
Well, unison's fine, but I just want to hear things distinctly. The thing that struck me about this one, aside from its length, it's like these two songs, this one and the next song, are like a minute 20.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of Anthrax. I think Anthrax's first album wasn't until like 85.
This one actually would probably get my pickest for one of the weaker tracks on the album.
But
I mean, once you move past the suicidal shock value, you know.
I think DK must have been a big influence on Anthrax.
Probably.
Because I'm hearing a lot of Anthrax on a few songs.
Although, I Don't Need This Fucking World is a fantastic chant.
Yeah.
you can't deny that.
Track 3, When You Get Drafted. Love the opening riff. This is just where they go straight up hardcore.
How is this only not even 90 seconds?
Yeah.
It's insane.
And it's Jello's most growling vocal.
Yes.
He actually growls on this one, which caught me. I didn't remember him growling.
He goes Charles Manson here.
And this sort of space-sounding guitar solo.
Yes.
I would love to know what Ray was running it through.
In the same strange way, it's like the same theme as Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, only from the point of view of the less fortunate.
Right. On to track 4, Let's Lynch the Landlord. This is my favorite.
I love this one, too.
Absolutely adore the bass riff. It's the one DK thing that I've actually learned to play and play regularly. The vocal kind of reminds me of Joey Ramone.
Yeah,
because Ramone did that kind of 50s influence thing, and
this is of course surf rock. Yeah, you know,
surf rock, 60s 50s kind of influence sort of thing that Joey was doing, and Jello kind of borrows from it here. Love the groove. Love the composed guitar solo, which is not something that Ray does a lot. he just kind of lets whatever happened happen during his solos. Yeah. Except for this one, he clearly composed it.
Well, the When You Get Drafted solo was the, yeah, the spy theme kind of thing.
That's true. Yeah. But that was more playing with the sound effect than like a melody. That's true. On to track 5, Drug Me. This one is just super thrash.
He's back to Roger Rabbit here. Yeah. It's really strange, this one. I mean, just that hypnotic keyboard hook to it.
Mm-hmm. And this great kind of space guitar sound on between the vocals and on the chorus.
And then it gets into this whole Looney Tunes vibe.
Yeah.
As you can hear him chasing his tail around pretty much.
And this, again, was another one that reminded me of Anthrax. On to track 6, Your Emotions. Great groove, more great cello warble. I checked
probably the poppiest song on this one, right?
Yeah. I checked the years. The B-52's first album was 79, this was 80. So Fred Schneider and Jello did not influence each other. They both kind of had a similar thing going at the same time.
And Spotify has like a rehearsal from like 78 or 79 where they're working on these songs that I'm going to listen to.
Nice.
Shortly. I didn't want to listen to before we did the episode.
Because even when we reviewed Just Fred last year, we talked about... Was it last year? Yeah. We talked about...
Who knows about time?
Oh, yeah,
time like is holding up.
Whatever.
We
talked about how similar Fred Schneider and Jello are.
So, oh, yeah.
And this struck me on this song. And I was shocked to hear that they really were within a year of each other. On to track 7, Chemical Warfare. Love the opening riff. Love the aggressive groove. Love the complete parody in the middle. I couldn't place the song that they're referencing.
And I mean, it's funny singing about an act of terrorism like this in the early 80s.
Yeah.
It was almost like, it's around the same time as the Talking Heads did Listening Wind, which is, of course, you know, the difference is they're just doing this for fun.
But that there's like a classical piece or like an old song that they reference in the middle that is just a complete 180, which I adore.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, too. It's kind of like a carnival.
Yeah, yeah. It's the carnival music is what it is. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just absolute chaos at the end.
You're right.
Track 8, California Uber Alice.
Now, this is being side 2. And I'd say with this album, it's one of the really rare exceptions where I think the second side is stronger than the first.
Okay.
Usually, I think you have people that they put their strongest stuff at the beginning, and and here I feel, you know, they have a lot of 602, you know, 5 stuff on the first side, and right. You know, they've got some good songs, but wow.
The lyrics for this one were written by Jello and John Greenway for their band The Healers. Jello composed the music in one of his rare attempts at composing on bass. So it was written on a bass, sounds like it. Love the bass line. Great guitar sound. I love the sort of stabbing chords in the first verse and how the second verse really just picks up the pace. And then how it slows down to this menace in the bridge.
Right. Have you heard the In God We Trust version?
No.
Where it's about Reagan?
No, I haven't. And ooh,
he's straight up just yelling. Nice. This is kind of, you know, they're kind of, you know, tongue in cheek here. Wait, you know,
this
about
is a joke. Nobody really Nazis. Thinks that, you know, Brown is going to do this. Reagan, on the other hand,
yeah, where, and of course it got covered by the Disposable Heroes of Hypocrisy later on, rapping about Pete Wilson.
And the way it picks up after it slows down to that menace, that just gradually picks up. People talk a lot about Come On Eileen and how that kind of picks up in the middle. This is a much smoother way of doing it.
Wow, smoother. And you wouldn't expect them to be smoother.
No. Because Come On Eileen, it's a little jagged the way they pick that up. This just gradually picks up into just chaos.
Yeah. Organic poison gas.
And then this great machine gun riff at the end. Now, before we get to this next one, little story. Back in mid-90s, early 90s, driving home from college, OCC, the community college we both went to where we met, there was a Toys R Us on the way home. And I like toy stores. I'm an overgrown kid. So on the way home, I decide to stop into Toys R Us, listening to this album in my car. What song should happen to kick in the very fucking second I pull into the Toys R Us parking lot? Track 9, I Kill Children.
I remember just telling someone the title of this song, and it just blew them away that someone could go here.
Yeah. Just think about pulling into a toy store of course I'm in my early 20s, so I have it, blasting so you can clearly hear it on the outside of the car. And I Kill Children kicks in.
It's definitely the most psychotic piece on the whole album.
I gotta say, this is my pick for weakest.
Oh yeah?
It's just kind of boring shock value now.
I don't think it's... I mean, it still holds its shock value. I think no one... I mean, who's gone here since this?
Oh, yeah, but it's... it doesn't really say anything. Like, even, like, Drug Me and Kill the Poor is a lot of shock value, but it makes a point.
Yeah.
This doesn't make a point.
He just doesn't like kids.
It's just right. Shock for shock's sake. I do like the nice little bass groove in the middle.
Oh man. And then like Ever Wanna Die, of course you have it. Just like I love how it's not just that they're saying it, it's that he really breaks it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what he wants to do.
Right. On to track 10, Stealing People's Mail. The music is just this great riff on like early rock and roll and blues.
This is like a Weird Al parody of themselves, it feels like.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hilarious, of course.
Yeah, there's a great single note riff in the pre-chorus. Love the sound of the solo. And it's just this kind of like fun, straight-up rock and roll thing about literally stealing people's mail.
Yes, that's what they're doing for kicks.
Reminds me of Been Caught
Stealing.
Steal
your mail.
I think James ripped them off of it. At least in concept.
But this, of course, is more personal because it's not just stealing from some store.
Right.
They're going to get pictures of your kids and, cut off, ties with your family and just laugh at your letters.
Mm. On to track 11, Funland at the Beach. Love the great opening riff. And Jello gets very aggressive on this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in case you missed I Kill Children, they double down.
Yeah, more shock value.
Detail. However, it's kind of an indictment on capitalism, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, money over safety.
Right.
Just like, some kids died. But, consult your lawyer and you'll get some money back.
And that's kind of my point with I Kill Children. Because Jell-O does go dark. But Jell-O usually goes dark for a point.
Kicks.
I Kill Children was just dark for dark's sake. At least in this one, even. He goes dark. He goes shock value, but it makes a point.
Yeah.
Nice short solo. Ray doesn't solo him often, but I like how when he does, he makes it worth it. Track 12, Ill in the Head. Great chaotic opening. Love the kind of off-kilter riff between the vocals.
It's pretty much the same song as Forward to Death, except
in a lot of ways.
I like this one better because he doesn't have the I don't need this fucking world, but I just think it comes together as a song better.
Yeah, I love how it slows and gets even weirder in the chorus. The end gets kind of proggy.
Oh yeah,
which is not something I thought I'd ever say about DK.
Well, I mean, for them, this is quite a long song at 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
Not the longest, though. I think that's California Burrells. On to track 13, Holiday in Cambodia.
This is the longest.
This is the longest?
This is 4.5 minutes.
Okay, it was this one. I don't know if it was this one or California or else. Okay. The use of the N-word doesn't age well.
That came up when I think it was Serge and Dave Grohl covered this.
Okay.
And he changed it to How the Brothers Feel Cold. Okay. But, of course, the point of the song is that it's some asshole who's bragging, you know, he would use that word while he's bragging about how, that's the point of the lyric, is that he's using that word while he's bragging about how he knows their experience.
Right, right.
The character in the song.
Yeah. Love the kind of avant-garde guitar at the beginning.
He's just, oh, yeah.
Ray is just making noise, but he's doing it in a really interesting way. Ray,
this whole song is just this crazy atmospheric thing of tension, you know?
And Ray's guitar work is fascinating because it's simple, but it's incredibly well thought out.
Right. Oh, yeah, especially in this song. This is a masterpiece in a way for, you know, and it has to get my pick for strongest track just because of it. It's just, it's so much tension and so much... with the political statement too, of course, but also being like, these assholes should just be sent to Cambodia.
And who was it I thought Ray was? Like, I had a theory back in the day that Ray turned into, was it
I had a theory that Ray was Al Jurgensen.
Okay, it was your theory. Okay.
Because they wound up, you know, working together on Lard. But, you know, Ray is a different person, apparently. Yeah.
But his playing is just fascinating because it's simple but incredibly well thought out.
He could be a better guitar player than Al.
Yeah. Oh, he is.
For all I know.
Al's not a great guitar player. On to track 14, the closer, Viva Las Vegas. Yes, it is an Elvis cover. Elvis kind of works better as punk.
You had the climax in Holiday in Cambodia.
And
you get the denouement in Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah. I love how loud the bass is. Elvis kind of works better as punk. That's really all I have to say about it.
You know, it's they just turn something innocent into something subversive, which is what they're all about.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a change in the lyrics, something about coke at the end.
Yeah, because, I mean, there is Vegas of just being this debauchery and just, well, what else is going on there?
Well, it's Elvis.
Yeah, that's true.
So they had to reference him. Stupid question, but do you recommend it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, as far as punk albums go, I think this is I've always used this one as kind of like the blueprint, the proto.
For hardcore, yeah, in a lot of ways. Yeah, I recommend it too. It's just a classic of early hardcore. If you haven't heard it and you like the genre, you just owe it to yourself to check it out.
Like, if someone came to me and said, hey, you know, I've never heard a punk album before. What album should I hear to like really get the genre down? And yeah, I would give them this one.
All right, that's it for Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. Until next time, it'll be reviewing Swears by Marianne Call. Yes, we've done a Marianne Call album before, but this one is a big departure. It's also an EP, which is something we said we wouldn't do, but again, big departure, so I think it bears talking about. Plus, we're doing double feature on Zombie Takeout next week, so it'll be nice to have a very short episode of Hearing.
Have you heard this music already, or no?
I've heard one song from it.
Okay, so it would be really funny if she's hyping this as a big departure, and it wasn't.
I've heard one song called Fix It. Her version of garage rock is interesting, because she's very influenced by kind of musical theater and traditional pop and even classical. And most of her stuff is kind of jazz-influenced folk.
Yeah.
So to hear her do garage rock, it's kind of fascinating. I don't know if it exactly works, but the lyrics are genius.
Well, I mean, sometimes I find that exciting when you're going on a journey, you know?
Right. And anyway, until then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.